This story from the book, Blind Spot. Carla Kaplan was an assistant professor of American literature at Yale University. A serious young scholar in her late 20s, Carla looked even younger than her age. Carla was also a dedicated quilter. Working with patches of cloth, Carla could be transported to faraway places of pattern and color. One evening while washing the dishes, a crystal bowl slipped from her hands. As she tried to catch the bowl, it hit the sink and broke. A jagged edge slit her hand from mid-palm to wrist. With blood gushing everywhere, she and her boyfriend made the best bandage they could and rushed to the emergency room at the university-affiliated hospital. At the ER, Carla's boyfriend made it clear to the physician on duty that Carla's quilting was important to her and dependent upon fine motor skills that the injury might impair. The doctor seemed to understand the concern and expressed confidence that all would be well. "We'll stitch it up real quickly," he said. As the doctor prepared Carla's hand for the stitches, a student volunteer working nearby recognized Carla and exclaimed, "Professor Kaplan, what are you doing here?" The sentence seemed to cause the doctor to stop in his tracks. "Professor," he asked, "are you a professor at Yale University?" "Yes." Within seconds, Carla found herself on a gurney to the surgery department. The best hand surgeon in Connecticut was called in, and a team worked for hours to restore Carla's hand to perfection. And thankfully, Carla regained full use of her hand. Carla's story is just one illustration of an all-too-common problem. The star-bellied sneetches only allowed sneetches from their in-group to come to the parties on the beach. We human beings often provide preferential treatment to people in our in-groups. In this sermon series, the goal is for us to explore our hidden biases so that we can live in better alignment with our moral values. There's a lot of good news, which I'm going to refer to today. Amongst the good news is the fact that increasing numbers of people believe in and are dedicated to democratic and egalitarian principles. However, on the downside, mind bugs and hidden prejudices still play significant roles in maintaining gaps between our moral values and our actions. So today we explore, how can we close the gap? How are we closing the gap? Let's take a step back to examine how we human beings develop thoughts and feelings about who is in our in-group and who is not. Actually, human beings are among many species that experience intense attachments amongst in-groups. When baby humans and baby ducklings are born, both groups experience what psychologists call the faces of the mothers being stamped in. Stamped in is the phrase in psychology. The faces of the first people with whom we relate are etched in to our minds and souls. people or ducks who look like our mother become our us or our in-group. Banerjee and Greenwald write that by 9 months of age, human infants are better able to distinguish between two of their own race faces compared to their ability to distinguish two other race faces. And the facility of recognizing faces in our own group has a flip side. And maybe the basis for a curious mind bug we know well in our own adult lives. The perception that members of groups other than our own look and even behave alike. This is called the out-group homogeneity effect. The perception that members of groups other than our own look and even act alike. So, we have historic, innate, physiological tendencies for connecting with our in-group, and we have mechanisms for categorizing people as either in our groups or out. And all these dynamics played into the creation of not only absurd lies about the meaning of skin color, not only the creation of evil systems like slavery and apartheid, but also these human tendencies of prejudicial categorization have been used to perpetuate disadvantage for women, minority groups, people of color, gay, lesbians, bisexual, transgender, low-income, disabled folks, and other. Carla the quilter almost received treatment for her hand that could have come up well short of providing sufficient care. Carla, the Yale professor, received hours of the finest surgery, sparing no cost or effort to move as close as possible to full recovery. This was a discriminatory act of omission. Perhaps unknowingly, the medical team almost omitted needed care to somebody they perceived as out of their group. Studies show that far from an anomaly, this discriminatory omission is common human behavior. Many studies show today that in a variety of service sectors in America, white people still consistently receive more help than black people. This includes from black people at times, and these are in many sectors, including banking and education, we know. Some of the most serious consequences manifest when hidden biases cause violence, imprisonment, and death. In Chicago, a task force appointed by Mayor Rahm Emanuel reported this week that racism has contributed to a long pattern of institutional failures by the Chicago Police Department, the second biggest police department in the United States of America. The CPD's own data show, the task force says, officers have mistreated people, operated without sufficient oversight, and lost the trust of residents. I'm from Chicago. The report confirms what people of color in Chicago have been saying for decades about being unfairly tasered, beaten, and shot. In the stressful American landscape, many black folks generate creative strategies to signal that they are harmless. African-American journalist Brent Staples whistles popular pieces of classical music in public places to reassure passersby. A black man whistling creates an alternative automatic association. Vivaldi equals harmless. Instead of black equals criminal or weapons. And we know that brown people whistling nice tunes is not going to cut it. It's not enough to solve the brutal problems. We can and must do much better. But how? How do we work with our hidden biases so that we can live in better alignment with our values? There is a lot of good news and success happening. For starters, over the last 50 years, time and time again, it's documented a striking reduction in people making overt expressions of prejudice. That matters. There's integrity in those studies. Over the last 50 to 75 years, many studies show significantly growing percentage of people who declare they're dedicated to egalitarian values. You might not believe that, but that could be because of a mind bug you have or a prejudice. So I believe an increasingly important part of the task, not the only task, but something we can focus on and do something about more than ever, is to focus on how subconscious prejudices create behaviors which violate our egalitarian values. We know more and more that so much of what we do is subconscious. Read David Brooks. Last week I mentioned that visual illusions are similar to cognitive illusions. Similar to our blind spot while driving a car, our cognitive blind spots make us think we see what we do not. We make mistakes based upon inaccurate ideas. You may know that in the automotive industry, there's a new device with radar that may soon be widely available for managing the driving blind spot. Can we develop similar mechanisms for our mind bugs and prejudices? I think we can. I think we are. I think we have to keep asking what they look like to be effective. Certainly, many such mechanisms would involve communities of souls gathered in common purpose. We people are more likely to engage in discrimination remotely than we are face to face. If we're dealing with mail or email or the phone, studies show I'm more likely to discriminate than I am with you. Honest, face-to-face relational community with accountability and love is essential for reducing the gap between our moral values and our behavior. This is a primary reason that I believe in church. I was blessed to grow up in a racially diverse church like ours. When I was 4, my family was spending Thanksgiving with a large extended black family in our church. And at one point, in a loud voice, I asked my mother, "Why is Roberta's skin so dirty?" My mother, thank the Lord, picked me up in her arms. We went over to Roberta. My mom put her arm next to Roberta's and said, "Honey, Roberta's skin is not dirty at all." Together, my mother and Roberta, who I still have a relationship with to this day, explained people have different colors of eyes and skin and hair. People are people. This is the simple but challenging work of the church, to teach our children and ourselves and have our children teach us again and again and again. We should not act like sneetches, hurting other sneetches and driving ourselves crazy, continually determining who's in the in-group and who's out. Sneetches are sneetches, and people are people. And thank goodness That is the gospel. That's the truth. At this church, for decades, our transformation team and our ending racism team have been helping us to debug unhelpful biases and build new images, stamp new ideas in our souls of what diverse, justice-making community looks like and can be. In our worship services and our children's programs, we work hard, intentionally, to imprint upon our minds and souls a diverse array of faces and voices and music. We're not perfect, but we try every week. Every week it's on our mind. In a world where too often women are not associated with leadership, our religion is blessed with over 50% female clergy, the only major religion in America with over 50% female clergy. We know the significant benefits of female clergy leaders like Stephanie Nichols, Nina Gray, Rebecca Froom, Mara Dowdle, Joan Javier Duval, on and on. We know. And we grow the positive role of female leadership in the wider world by telling our friends how awesome it is when Joan led that memorial service, when Mara preached, when Rebecca visited the hospital. Man, I mean woman. In our church, we look to important examples of success, which we can emulate. Catch this. In 1970, fewer than 10% of the instrumentalists in America's major symphony orchestras were women. About that time, some people began to wonder if male dominance in instrumental virtuosity was less a gift of nature to men than a gift of culture that recognizes, encourages, and promotes male talent. Starting in the 70s, several major American symphony orchestras experimented with a new procedure that involved placing a physical screen between the auditioning instrumentalists and the hiring committee. In the next 20 years, the proportion of women hired by major orchestras doubled from 20 to 40%. I think it's fascinating because the symphonies reduced cognitive blind spots by placing a screen making visual blindness. The screen eliminated the visual illusion of who could best play. How could we apply these understandings or similar techniques in important decisions we make in our lives? I want to hear your thoughts. Our country is making progress in other areas where culture has been gifting men with recognition and support. When Linda Bernstein attended the University of Pennsylvania Law School in 1972, the ratio of women to men was 20 to 300. Now the number of women graduating law school is almost equal to men around the country. The next wave of lawyers that have been coming out saw examples. They were imprinted with superb lawyers like Linda Bernstein, Andrea Perry, Patricia Hamill, and others. And the gals said, hey, I want to be a great lawyer. I'm going to be a great lawyer. I can do it. Unfortunately, the ratio of law firm partners is at least 5 to 1, still male to female. So we need the next wave to come in. And it can happen. Male equals mathematician association is being broken down, and this is important. You may think of this as the Larry Summers debate, the Harvard president who caused a big ruckus. The, The ratio closed of men to women in mathematic grad schools in the 80s, it was 11 to 1, men to women. In the 90s, it was 3 to 1. The speed of shrinking that gap, representing such extensive demographic groups, shows the major role of environmental factors for women in math. It cannot be predominantly genetic with that fast of a shrinkage. Unitarian Universalists have been working hard to reduce the impact of mind bugs and prejudices against our gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender brothers and sisters for decades. Reverend Bill Gardner, who's coming next week, don't miss it, was here in the 80s doing good work with the people of the church, intensively established union ceremonies in the early 80s in this sanctuary with the vote of the congregation, but it wasn't easy. Not everybody agreed. Not everybody got it. But most everybody hung in there and said, well, we're a church. We're going to go through this together regardless. And a lot of that was is a model of how we can work through these things. Today, Unitarian Universalists have partnered with people around the country. Thank goodness. It was part of getting the Supreme Court to endorse marriage equality, let people love whom they love and have the benefits and support they deserve. And today we have to do this. People working with people around the state passed the Pennsylvania Fairness Act. It's still legal in Pennsylvania to fire somebody from a job because they're gay. That's pathetic and embarrassing. And we are working to change the law. That'll change a little stamp that the kids get given of what's right and wrong. We have to do that. We're working with Gustavo and Peter and Martine and Yvonne and Dennis to change mind bugs about immigrants. The photos you see show beautiful human beings, a part of the human family, breaking down the code, making a new code of the beauty of humanity, the beauty of America. Thank you, Gustavo. The simple truth is we have to do this work together. Diverse neighborhoods and churches are an essential part of solving the problems. The more time we spend with each other, including in fiesta, in authentic relationships, the more we recognize the difference between people in other groups and our increasingly diverse communities. Listen, this weekend I've seen Mount Airy Baseball, which is unbelievably fun and diverse and spirit-filled, those little kids running around playing baseball together. Friday, many schools around the region had GLBT justice parades. These are the kids leading us. And many times I think they're better equipped to recognize that people are people. Daddy, what categories? Let's hold our children in our hearts. What we say we do gets imprinted in them. We owe it to them as we build the future. Think of the children of the world the next time you have an obligation or an opportunity to be of help. Blessings be. Amen.